You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I am officially running for President of the United States.
Primary consultant is myself because I have a very good brain and I've said a lot of things.
When you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
I like China. You can win against China if you're smart.
So don't tell me about China. I know China.
China! I beat the people from China. What the hell is going on?
It's time for State of the States.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Oh, where to begin?
We are heading to the States again this week to find out what is happening with the labour crisis there. But first, I must note, Bernie Sanders, the senator whose youth-led movement pushed for sweeping social change, has announced that he is ending his presidential campaign for the 2020 Democratic nomination. In a statement, Sanders noted the decision was difficult and painful, adding that he could not, in good conscience, continue to wage a futile primary battle as the coronavirus pandemic sweeps throughout the US. Sanders' departure all but solidifies former Vice President Joe Biden as the Democratic presidential nominee in an election against Donald Trump, scheduled for later this year. His campaign has been credited for raising the American consciousness, bringing attention to the struggles of economic justice, social justice, racial justice, and environmental justice. In a statement, Biden thanked Sanders for being a powerful voice for a fairer and more just America, stating that Sanders hasn't just run a campaign, he's created a movement. So with that news, let's go now to Rachel.
Recently, we've been coming across disjointed news stories about strike action in the United States. The Amazon strikes, the Whole Foods sick out, and General Electric workers calling for ventilators to be made instead of jet engines. The stories seemed slow at first, but as they quickly build up, it is becoming apparent that COVID-19 is an unprecedented labor crisis. While massive strike action is not unprecedented in American history, especially during times of war and economic turmoil, the COVID-19 strikes are taking place in a very different America. A lot of America's most essential workers are contracted, working for app-based companies, rarely meeting their managers or co-workers. And for those who aren't contracted, there is an absence of established trade unions, with both the government and corporate working to stop union activity. But still, strikes are growing in popularity, often emerging from grassroots movements. I spoke to Dr. Paul Taillon, who is a senior history lecturer at the University of Auckland. He specialises in working people and the labour movement in the United States and has written on gender, race and unionism in the States in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. I started by asking for an update on the Trump administration's suspension of union elections, which effectively blocks the formation of new unions. I also asked how strike action is still so strong, even with this pushback from the government.
I was just on the AFL-CIO website this morning. That's the American Federation of Labor Congress of Industrial Organizations, which is the umbrella national institution. And according to their website, the NLRB has reversed course on suspending all union elections.
Oh, they have.
Yeah. So, you know, but this is amazing. Things are happening so quickly. And with the NLRB, apparently it had suspended union elections. Those are the kinds of elections that take place in workplaces according to certain guidelines by which workers can voluntarily elect to organize a union. And I think that had been in place for maybe a fortnight. In any event.
Because of the pandemic, yeah.
Yeah, and that was the reason given, although, and I don't mean to suggest anything here, but you can draw your own conclusions. We've seen around the world, like Hungary, where authoritarian leaders are taking advantage of this crisis to extend their authority. And in the United States, unfortunately, this whole pandemic response has been incredibly politicized and polarized. You can see it in a number of aspects of the response and in social and political life from the states on up to the national level. In any event, I wouldn't be surprised if there was not an additional agenda behind that ruling. I don't know why the NLRB reversed course, but I am sure that the pressure brought by the AFL-CIO had something to do with it. What's interesting, I think, though, in terms of the labor movement's response is what I see as a mix of the established unions working and responding to try and help their members, to help them stay safe and healthy, and, you know, broadly to be an advocate on behalf of all American workers on the one hand. So you've seen some unions walking out. You might have read about the workers at the Amazon warehouse, and there's another online retailer in which workers walked out. I'm not entirely sure if that was what we might call a wildcat spontaneous walkout or whether it was sanctioned by the union, but there are other examples of workers' actions who, and this is a conversation we could get onto, but so many of these union members and workers in general are on the front lines of dealing with the response. And of course, the impact the pandemic is having on working people, it disproportionately affects them compared to middle class and professional, and of course, the wealthy, well-fed classes. So what we've seen here is a mix of spontaneous rank and file action and organized response on the behalf of established unions and the national union movement too, both to, you know, defend and assist workers, but also I think to make sure that the government and employers who might not be friendly toward unions don't take advantage of this moment to further beat back unions.
So I guess I'm wondering, how are these grassroots leaders able to organize when the sort of modern workplace is so isolating? They're either working in the contracted hours through an app-based company like Instacart, or they have to work in a warehouse and follow social distancing. So
yes.
How are they organizing?
My guess, because I'm not directly involved and I haven't been following exactly how this is working, but I would say that social media is a very important mechanism. And indeed, over the past decade or two, many social movements and unions, you know, among them, have really taken advantage of mobile technology, social media to organize. And in this regard, the internet and social media has been both a, in my view, a scourge of 21st century life in terms of its manipulability and the way in which trolling and so-called fake news and can you know, cloud our atmosphere. But at the same time, it's been a tremendously useful means for grassroots organizing and spontaneous mobilizing too. We've seen this in many different social movements. But at the same time, the nature of the American workforce these days, as you probably know, it's the great majority of American workers do not belong to a union. And that covers both unions in traditional, or workers in traditional industries, but also workers in this new gig-based economy where workers don't always easily fall into traditional employment relationships that the NLRB has sanctioned for union organizing. Although that has changed in recent years. And so, you know, quite a few workers simply don't have access to the kind of institutional representation, resources, and protection that unions have to offer.
Is this why strikes like this haven't happened in so long? I'm not too sure of the history, but when was the last time America saw strikes of this scale?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, going back, looking over the long span of U.S. history, there have been a number of historic and important strike waves, which have coincided to either periods of rapid development and change, or what I sometimes think of as fractures or rupture points in the society and the political economy. One such wave spanned the late 19th century. Another super important strike wave occurred just at the end of the First World War. During the 1930s, another important strike wave, and then immediately following the Second World War. Then over the course of the long post-World War II period, unions remained strong, but went into a period of decline for a number of complex reasons. The 1970s stands as an important shift globally in terms of governments, political economies, and labor movements. In the United States, the last big strike wave occurred during the 1970s, and much of it was driven by rank-and-file rebellions and social justice movements. The neoconservative governments of the 1980s and the 90s and the early 21st century have made it increasingly difficult for traditional American unions to survive, especially since the sectors in which they organized basic industries like auto and steel and so forth have declined so precipitously. Combined with the perception that many affluent Americans have of unions as either being constraining of individual liberty or simply not relevant to their lives. Fast forward to the early 20th century, and Americans born, you know, at the turn of the century, growing up now in their 20s and 30s, they are coming of age in a very different society, economy, and historic moment. And their attitudes toward unions and politics don't necessarily correspond to their previous generations, and I think they're more open to forms of labor organizing and strike activity, which, well, with any luck, will be a way forward.
That's very true. I guess because of lockdown, organizing has sort of been forced to take place through either non-action, not going to work, or social media action. Mm-hmm. Will this change? So do you think COVID-19 is going to change the American labor movement?
That's your question. It's a great question, and it's part of the big question that many commentators are asking, and that goes to the world will be different when we get through this in many ways. And I would like to be able to say that it will be for the better. I don't know. One thing I can say, though, is that unions have, as part of their organic makeup, the principle of solidarity and mutuality. And you know, in our country, in Aotearoa, we've seen this as almost a national byword, be kind to each other. Well, in the lexicon of the labor movement, the crisis affects everyone, and it disproportionately affects working people, the least affluent. And in this regard, the old slogan of the American Knights of Labor, an injury to one is the concern of all, is exactly what the historic moment needs at present. So my hope is that this principle animates organizing movements, you know, through social media, reaching isolated workers, and possibly, you know, marks a new infusion for organizing movements going forward.
I guess my last question is a general strike where essential services in a given area, so say the big cities, is that imminent? Because that's kind of been what I've been seeing around on social media. So what's the parallels between the strikes now and kind of general strikes for American history? Do you think it's going to happen? Does everything in Manhattan just stops, or what do you think?
Again, that's a very interesting question. The circumstances of the present are unprecedented, it is true. That said, over the span of U.S. history, true general strikes have been very rare. In fact, I can only think of two or three over the span of United States history. One during the first national strike wave in 1877 in St. Louis, briefly, and then in one of the other important strike waves in 1919 in Seattle. Both of those strike waves, general strikes, were relatively short. They were animated by a spirit of solidarity that was very particular to that historical moment and quite exciting too. In the present, I'm not sure if that is a possibility, especially since one must keep in mind that the ability of, you know, the other side, if we can put it that way, to counter what a general strike actually is, and that is a direct challenge to the existing political economic order. The ability of the other side to counter such a general strike is really quite strong. That said, given social media, given this entirely new terrain, given the way that working people are being disproportionately affected, I'd say anything is possible.
Excuse me. I'm really rich.
That was State of the States.
Bye-bye.
How stupid is this?
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.